Next case on our calendar is 96962 Lunch Corporations versus Ohio Edison Company. Justice Cook has recused herself from this case. We're very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Cook, Judge Fred Young, who is a judge of the Court of Appeals sitting in the 2nd District. Welcome, Judge Young. Mr. Edwards.
One thing that's vitally important in this case is the case Southfield Publishing Company versus the Public Utilities Commission. That case says that if there's two tariffs that apply to a customer, the customer gets the lower tariff. There's no inquiry necessary, there's nothing else necessary. If there's two tariffs that apply, the customer gets the lower tariff. That's the holding in that case. An equally important holding in that case is that if a tariff is ambiguous, that ambiguity is construed in favor of the customer and against the utility. That case right here decides the large portion of the facts in front of this court.
And what it doesn't decide is whose impetus is it to bring that up. Obviously, the statute doesn't go on and say if there are two rates, it's the company's job to notify the consumer, the customer, of the lower rate. It doesn't say that the customer has to either. Why shouldn't we just say that we leave them where we find them?
Because in Southfield, the customer brought a lawsuit to collect that. That's exactly what we're doing in this case. We're bringing a lawsuit to collect the overcharge on the tariff. We're doing exactly the same thing that the customer in Southfield did when they sued the motor carrier.
Now, does that cause of action then go on forever? Or is there something that should limit it by latches or a year or an amended tariff or something?
I think latches would be the appropriate argument that a utility could make and say, look, you can't go back 50 years because of the difficulties in improvement. But latches is the appropriate argument, I believe, for a utility company to make in this particular instance on how far back you can go.
But you're making it the obligation of informing the customer of rates that are more in his liking or cheaper on the company.
I'm not making the obligation.
Why shouldn't it be the customer should look after his own welfare and go to the company and say what rates are there and what's cheaper for me to do? You want the company to do that, right?
No, I don't care if the company does or not. The customer doesn't do it. The customer doesn't file for a refund. The company's not hurt by it. Only if the customer files for a refund, yes. But, I mean, there haven't been hundreds of cases like this. Consumers coming out of the wall saying, I want a refund. You can look through. Well, there's been no appeals on this issue since Southfield to this court, and that was in 1940, whatever. So we've got 50 years. So this is not something that is going to start an avalanche of litigation. I think that Southfield clearly said that if a customer files for a tariff, files for a refund, they're entitled to it. And to get to your point, the obligation is on the customer. Well, who has the expertise in this area? Well, it's clearly the utility. And if you've ever looked in the appendix at some of those tariffs, they're impossible to decipher. That is absolutely the truth. They are impossible to decipher. And the facts in this case establish that the only way that my client was able to figure it out at all was to hire a utility consultant. So to put the burden on the customer does not look at the facts and reality of this case where all the expertise is in the utility.
Wouldn't that require the utility to know precisely what the customer's business is going to be versus what it perhaps is today? I mean, they'd have to project. You can think of all kinds of situations where the utility would be required to predict what your sales are going to be, what your needs are going to be for electricity. Why shouldn't that be the company's the user's responsibility to make that prediction and then come to the commissioner, come to the utility and say, look, we want a different rate because this is, or at least examine, tell us, why should that be the utility's responsibility to try to predict, speculate on what the company's needs are going to be?
Well, I don't think they have to speculate on the company's needs, Your Honor. That all they have to do, they've been the ones that created the situation. Let's be clear about it. Utilities are the ones who created multiple rates for multiple customers. They're the ones that filed the tariffs with the Public Utilities Commission. We can't understand why there's just not one rate. But they're the ones that created the situation by enforcing consumers to say, well, geez, which rate should I be on? I got to predict my needs, and then I have to go ask them.
Well, I stop you there. I guess I thought that the alternative rates were to attempt to distinguish between users of electricity, and that just as you're suggesting, one rate may benefit a customer more than some other rate. Isn't that the reason? Sure, they could have one rate, but I would guess there would be complaints about that, wouldn't there?
I don't know whether there would be or not.
Maybe not, but
into that. But I am saying that the utility is the one that's created these multiple rates and put the burden on then the consumer to figure out, well, what are our needs and go back and do that. And that's not what Southfield said. Southfield is very clear. It's a simple rule. If you file for a refund and you're entitled to it, then you get it. That's the holding of Southfield. It's been the holding for the last 50 years in the state. And the Public Utilities Commission about an inquiry and trying to comport back into an inquiry and what is an inquiry and what isn't an inquiry, that's silly. I mean, if you read the cases cited in here, that is absolutely silly of what is now an inquiry and what isn't. Well, in our case, we met with them in 1983 and complained about the high payment of our bill, but that's not, quote, enough of an inquiry in order to trigger their duty to tell us about alternative rates. Well, what could more possibly be more of an inquiry than us going complaining about high utility bills? In 1980 and 1981, pretty much everyone concedes that if Southfield is applicable, and then there's no reason why it shouldn't be, then we're entitled to a refund because there were multiple rates that we were, that Lunch was entitled to in 80 and 81 that we weren't given. Now, in 82, my client had been consulting with the utility company for 3 years on what's the best way for us to get service and install new equipment. The utility writes back a letter and says, we have done an economic analysis of the alternatives, and your best way to do it is for you to build a substation. You build a substation. And then they tell my client, now, but by building the substation, you were disqualified from the cheapest rate because you became, quote, a transmission customer. Well, why didn't they tell us that in 1980 and 81 and 82 when we were asking, when we were making the inquiries? They didn't tell us that then. So we build a substation, and then we're disqualified from the cheapest rate because we built a substation. Maybe if we had that information on those inquiries, we wouldn't build the substation. We would have continued taking power, or we would have figured out some other way to do it, but we weren't told that when we made the inquiries that we did. If we are a distribution in the tariff for general service small, it talks about we can obtain the tariff of general service small if we obtain voltage from other distribution facilities. And then the question is the one, the 23,000 volt line for serving a distribution facility. That's the issue in that thing. And we believe that the definition in 4933.81 of the revised code on the Certified Territories Act establishes that line was indeed a distribution facility. And we were entitled to the lower tariff during that time, regardless of the fact that was in a quote, different section of chapter 49, it was in the Certified Territory Act. It's the only place the distribution line is defined in the revised code, and if you accept that definition, which you should, then that's a distribution facility, and we are entitled to the lower of the two tariffs. removal of the magnetic tape meter. Once we built the substation, they installed a magnetic tape meter, especially a meter to measure the amount of electricity delivered to my customer. In 1986, they removed that. Well, the removal of that tape meter, or that tape meter gave us two different things that could help lower my client's bill. It told us when we would, my client would peak, what part of the day they used the highest amount of electricity. If that occurred in an off-peak period, then we were forgiven for part of that. They also told us the power factor. And the power factor is basically how efficient you're using it. Are you using all the demand that we give you, or are you using half of it? We were deprived of those two items, and that violated their own tariff. The removal of that meter violated their tariff, and it violated their own internal policy. We had testimony of how it was damaged.
Well, you had testimony, and the company had testimony, and the commission made a factual finding. Tell me why. Why is the commission's factual finding on this issue not correct?
I was looking Brad Eberts in the eye, and I was looking...
Who is Ed Eberts? I don't know that.
Brad Eberts is their expert.
Okay.
And I was looking at Mr. Buchanan, another one of their experts, in the eye when I was cross-examining you. And I guarantee you, they weren't telling the truth. But the person who saw that, the hearing examiner, he didn't write the report. The commission did. And the commission didn't see that. They weren't able to observe the demeanor of the witness, whether he was fidgeting, whether he was sweating, whether he was coughing and clearing his throat. I saw that, the hearing examiner saw that, the commission didn't see that. I don't see how the commission can make a determination on credibility without observing the demeanor of the witness. This court has made that assertion repeatedly, time after time after time. It's the fact finder to make the determination of credibility. And you can't do that unless you see the witness discussed.
Well, did the hearing officer here not submit a report to the commission?
We don't know. It was never published.
Don't we assume that, I mean, that's the purpose of the hearing officer, isn't it? We assume that the commission acted properly in lack of any...
The hearing officer is required to publish a report, and we're given an opportunity to object to it. The report was never published to us. We don't know what the hearing examiner did. I don't think you can assume that. Once they don't publish the report that they were required to publish to us. Finally, they disregarded the testimony of one of the top experts in the country. We brought him in, we had him testify live there. No one asked him a question, yet his testimony has not even been discussed in the entire opinion on one of the crucial issues, which was uncontradicted. No one contradicted Greg May's testimony, and yet his testimony is never mentioned. There's no determination that he's not believable. There's just nothing. And I don't believe that's the appropriate way to treat an expert. Sloan Hackwell, doesn't matter where they come from, to not even discuss their testimony when it's uncontradicted in the record. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Ms. Jackson Forbes. I need to watch your time so you save some time for
it. Your Honor, as you just heard, appellant has just reaffirmed the facts that submitted to the commission below. You can tell this case is factually driven, and the commission, as a fact finder and aware of evidence in its complaint cases, properly weighed that evidence and filed an opinion setting forth the basis for its reasoning and its determination. Appellant has submitted nothing to this court today that warrants a reversal.
Well, he just disclaimed that they brought an eminent expert and they gave no indication that his testimony.
Your Honor, the commission opinion and orders does not have to go through each piece of evidence and determine what weight the commission gave that evidence. The commission opinion to be only set forth for reasoning, and that's what the commission does. What appellant is ignoring is that the commission opinion and order does indicate what their expert testimony testified about. The opinion and order does not have to indicate why the commission rejected that testimony. That is not a basis for reversible error here. Appellant had the burden of proof in the case below and simply presented no evidence to the commission to support a finding that there was any wrongdoing on behalf of Ohio Edison. The appellate raises the case of Southfield Publishing as a basis that they should have been placed on the proper tariff at all times, where there was no evidence submitted that they were not placed on a tariff for which they qualified on at all times. That evidence, what the evidence does show is that they say $4,000 a year being placed on a tariff which they qualify for, yet they don't recognize the $4,000 savings. Southfield is not applicable here because in that situation, the tariffs were ambiguous. There was no evidence submitted by appellants that the tariffs were ambiguous. These tariffs are approved by the commission. They can be reviewed by the customer. However, there was no evidence submitted by Lund's Corporation that they ever even contacted Ohio Edison about its tariffs. Southfield is clearly inapplicable here because there was no evidence that the tariffs were ambiguous. The commission does not require customers to interpret the tariff. What the commission does require is for a customer to just simply make an inquiry about its rate. Based upon that inquiry, the commission places an obligation on the utility to then inform that customer if such an auction rate exists. And to make that determination, the utility does do an analysis of that customer rate. There's no evidence here that the inquiry was ever made for Ohio Edison to contact.
What is he talking about then? What is counsel talking about then in four or five, six different instances when once contacted the utility and wanted to know about rates and so forth? What is he making that all up, is he?
Your Honor, what he is doing is making allegations, but those allegations are not substantiated by evidence.
So he's lying.
Your Honor,
he never contacted them for any discussion on the rates.
That's what the evidence presented below indicated.
He never presented anybody that said he went to the utility and discussed rates.
That is exactly correct. The 1983 payment plan inquiry was just that. If I inquire about a payment plan, Ohio Edison responded and allowed appellants to be placed on a payment plan. It's also interesting to know that when they made that inquiry in 1983, they could only be served on one payment plan, on one tariff, and that was General Service Large. So there was no alternate tariff to notify the customer of when that payment plan inquiry was made.
Now he alleges that as a result of discussions, they were told to put in a substation. I take it you don't dispute the substation was put in. That implies that it's more than the average communication between customer and the power company is taking place. That's a major step that most customers don't engage in.
That is correct.
And are we to assume that they took this? I assume that cost some significant money.
That's correct.
It was done at the cost of the customer.
That's correct.
Are we to assume that the customer undertakes such construction at considerable expense in return for the privilege of getting the higher rates?
No, Your Honor, we're not asking you to make that assumption. Appellant is asking you to make that assumption. But within those...
Well, no, I don't think so.
If I understand your question, Your Honor, appellant is asking this court to find within those contacts about constructing a substation there was some inquiry about rates. However, there was no evidence presented that at any unknown contact about the substation, there was any inquiry about its rent.
Well, what was he interested in the substation if it wasn't reducing the rates?
They were interested in knowing if Ohio Edison had the adequate capacity to serve that new piece of equipment.
Do you asking me to believe that these people came to Ohio Edison and you said construct the substation and you'll get better rates, and then when they constructed the substation, the rates didn't apply because of that, and you say, well, that doesn't constitute anybody asking us about the rates. What are you talking about?
Your Honor, within that inquiry about constructing the substation...
It sounds like we're speaking two different languages. Really, because you said there's no evidence that they ever talked about the rates. But why would they build a substation if they weren't interested in reducing their rates?
They built a substation to take additional capacity to feed power to this new shredder.
Well, they're not concerned with what that would cost rate-wise, then, would they be?
They presented no evidence that there was any dispute at that time. Again, Your Honor, that happened back in 1981. There was no evidence.
That doesn't count. Is that too long? Is that too far back?
We're not saying that it's too far back. We're just saying, if you're going to present these allegations, bring forth some evidence that you substantiate those allegations. And that simply wasn't enough.
Another point that you made, that the commission doesn't have to do that, the commission doesn't have to do this. Well, maybe the commission should have to do some of those things that you said that they don't have to do.
Are we talking about what the commission needs
right,
to
do? You said earlier in your argument, they
order.
Said, well, the commission doesn't have to do that. They don't have to say what evidence they believe. They don't have to say what evidence they disbelieve. They just sort of give an answer. Well, maybe they should have to do all that. Maybe it'd be clearer. Maybe we would be less cases involved in the commission if they were more clear of how they made their decisions.
Your Honor, I believe in this situation the commission was very clear.
No, all you said was they don't have to explain why they did it. That's all you said.
No, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. If I did make that statement, it was certainly not my intent that the commission doesn't have to explain itself. But the revised code statute that governs what the commission needs to say in its opinion and order does indicate the commission need only state the reasoning that prompts its determination. It does not say the commission has to go through every piece of evidence and determine what weight that evidence was accorded by the commission, only that it set forth the reasoning that prompts its determination. And that was done in this case. Appellant has shown no prejudice or error. Appellant hasn't even shown that it was prejudice. If the commission did not do this, I'm certainly not saying that they did.
Paying higher rates than are necessary is not prejudiced.
It was certainly their responsibility to inquire about their rates. If that customer, again, this customer is looking back 10 years later on what might have happened, what could have happened, but there was no evidence of what actually happened.
Well, in 1983, there wasn't even a different rate, was there? If we go back that far, so there was, that's a moot issue. There was no alternative rate, as I understand it. Isn't the problem with the record that the persons who testified for the customer had no personal knowledge of the conversations with Ohio Edison about alternative rates, and that the persons who testified for the company had personal knowledge and said that there was not an inquiry about alternative rates? Isn't that one reason the commission decided? It's, there's a factual, we have to look at the record here, but as I understand it, there was a deficiency in evidence from the customer to indicate that they had actually asked for alternative rates or even indicated that they were interested in alternative rates. And the company had a person who had the conversation with the person who didn't testify and said, there wasn't any inquiry, so the commission finds that there's not enough evidence to support the customer's allegations. Is that, am I oversimplifying, or?
No, Your Honor, you have hit the nail on the head. That is exactly what happened. There was just simply no evidence to substantiate the allegations. The commission made the only decision it could make in this case, and that was dismissal of the complaint for failure to meet their burden.
Getting back to the substation, wasn't the reason that that was put in because there was a flicker problem with a customer that was near the Lund's plant?
That is correct, Your Honor. Based upon the analysis conducted by Ohio Edison, there was a disturbance on the line that was degrading disturbance to a nearby restaurant. And Ohio Edison informed Lund of this based upon that analysis, that this additional shear being served by the 12 KV line would break one's own service and other customers' service. Ohio Edison had the responsibility to provide adequate service to all of its customers, not just one.
So the substation was not really put in to get a lower rate, but rather to ensure that not only Lund's would be getting adequate electricity, but the neighboring customers.
That is exactly correct. Your Honor, this is actually the case, and as the court well knows, the Senate reviews the manifest way of the evidence. Appellant has not even alleged that the commission's decision is not supported by the evidence of record, or that the commission's decision is not in line with the manifest way of the evidence standard. They clearly have the burden the commission afforded appellant 3 days in which to make its case. Appellant just simply didn't provide any credible evidence for a finding on their behalf.
Counsel, are you retreating from the special petitions argument for me in your brief?
Your Honor, the commission did not brief the issue of statute of limitations that was briefed by intervening Apple Ohio Edison Company and was responded to by.
If you want to leave any time for Mr. Burke, you probably had better give up the podium at this time.
Yes, Your Honor. I thank you for your consideration and respectfully request that this court reinforce the commission's decision to give up.
Thank you, Ms. Jackson Forbes. Mr. Burke.
Assuming there is evidence, like is being discussed here, what is the statute of limitations on this kind of an action? There really isn't one, is there, specifically?
I'm sorry, is there?
There really isn't one specifically, is there?
It's subject to dispute based upon past commission orders. There was an older commission order, I believe, in the late 1970s that seemed to indicate the 6-year statute on statutory violations did in fact apply, although it didn't disallow any damages or evidence in that case because it was all within the 6 years.
So because this is a longer period of time of that, if we find that to be a statute of limitation in this case, the case is over without anything else.
That's correct, Your Honor. For the issues raised in this case, either the 4-year or 6-year statute of limitations would apply. The 4-year would on the substation issue, because there the allegation went to negligence. The 4-year would apply having to do with the removal of a magnification interview that's in sort of negligently advised or negligently as the allegation. On the rate difference issues, I think that more in the complaint, it was more of a statutory violation type argument. And so the 6-year limit would probably apply there. And in this case, none of those would fall within the time frame of this.
Yeah, because the parameters they're asking for are 80 over the years. 80.
Complaint period started in February of 1980, concluded around June of 91. And they filed their case in the fall of 1994, November of 1994, I believe.
Well, so then there might be a couple of years at the end of the early 90s that would fall within the 6 years.
Well, in this case, after 1986, they're not making any allegation that there was a better rate issue.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought you just said the complaint period is 1980 to 1991. I thought that it went from 80 to 86. And after that, they conceded that there was no alternate rate.
That's correct. Yeah, the only thing that applies during the 86.
Difficult enough. Don't confuse me anymore.
I apologize. It is.
No, it's my fault. I should have asked it more clearly.
Yeah, the 86 to 91 time frame deals only with the issue of the magnitude
Which really wouldn't have put them in a different rate anyway, because the other rate was abolished and new one instituted. Right? Actually, there were three, I think, brought down to two.
Correct. That was,
Okay.
One thing I would like to emphasize before my time runs out is precisely the type of questions that were being asked by the court. But since there was interest in the substation, let me address that. The evidence showed there, Lunds contacted Ohio Edison, indicating that they were going to add a new machine, a shear, that would substantially increase the electric capacity of their plant. Not the electric capacity, the electric need, the electric demand of their plant. Ohio Edison endeavored to do an analysis to see if the current service could serve that increased demand and determined that they could not without interference on the line. So we advised Lunds, if you want to add this machine, you need to take service at a higher voltage, 23 kV, which is a transmission voltage. And
do you, as a matter of course, when somebody's trying to make an investment decision, so they're making a business decision here, I assume this machine costs them a lot of money, they make them a lot of money, and they're, one would assume they would also be interested in what the cost of electric is. If you tell them, we can't service that, we can't provide you that service unless you put in a substation, do you, as a matter of course, also alert them that if you go that route, now you're knocked out of the tariff category that you're presently in, you'd be in another category, to assist them in making that business decision as to whether or not to invest?
I would expect that what would actually occur. In this case, there simply wasn't any evidence what the discussions were with regard to what alternate rates may be available. Once you simply not to put someone on the stand and say precisely what you said, that we asked if this would impact our rates, and they told us it wouldn't. There just wasn't any evidence to that effect.
But in,
also, I'm sorry.
But in this case, too, they didn't really have much choice. They didn't put the substation in, they couldn't put the machine in. Is that the case?
That's correct. They wouldn't have been able, we wouldn't, that's what we told them. That we can't provide electricity at the current voltage. And at the time the substation came online, they only qualified for one rate. So the issue about alternate rates at that time is as Chief Justice Moyer said, rather, is moved because effective January 1982, they only qualified for the GS large rate, and that's the rate they were on.
And they didn't put the transmission station in to get a better rate, they put it in to get more electrical capacity.
That's correct. Yeah, that was the whole premise of them approaching us. It had nothing to do with lowering our electric bill. It had to do with, we're going to add this new machine. What do we have adequate capacity? What do we need to do? We conducted the analysis. We advised them what they needed to do. They went through their, presumably, their own economic analysis of the situation before. But that's what's critical here is that at all the critical junctures identified by the lines, they simply didn't put on any evidence. They didn't have anybody to come on and say, we weren't advised of alternate rates. They complained about not being advised of alternate rates, but they put no witnesses on the scene to testify to it. Based on this record, it's just as reasonable to assume that they were in fact advised of alternate rates.
You've used your time, Mr. Burke.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I would request the court to affirm the commission's
decision. Mr. Edwards, you've saved about 3 minutes of your time.
Mr. Edwards, do you agree that the key reason for putting the transmission station in was because you had to have additional electrical capacity?
Based on Edison's representations at page 639 of the record, in a letter from Lunds, it says, based on an economic analysis of the alternatives, it is recommended that this customer be served at 23 kV. It was done based on Ohio Edison's recommendations in writing to Lunds that this was the most economic alternative to do.
Was there evidence to show that they were wrong in that representation? Did you offer evidence to say that that was inaccurate or wrong, or that you were misled?
Yes, we did, because...
What was that evidence?
By doing that, according to them, we were deprived of the cheaper rate to the tune of about $120,000. By doing that, they said we were disqualified from the lower rate. By doing this very
But did you put on someone that testified to that fact?
Yes. Our expert, Sherry Lasco, testified that if we had been served on general service small instead of general service large, we would have incurred about $120,000 less in utility bills.
But could you have put your machine in at all if you hadn't done that?
We don't, no, we could not have put the machine in, but that is something that we should have been told about.
Well, it seems like the court reporter missed all the evidence that you said you put on. I don't understand this.
About what?
About the inquiry about the rates. You were interested in lower rates. You never presented anybody to testify
it's
about
on
that.
On page 638 and 6.
Slow down a little bit. Okay. They indicate through their argument that the commission did not have any other alternative because you did not offer any evidence to all these arguments you are now making to us, that when the commission heard this, they had no other alternative because you didn't present them with any alternative to do what they did. Now, what about that? Where were your witnesses? They said you didn't have any.
Well, our witnesses are in the record. We had an expert who testified as to our damage, Sherry Lawson. We had an expert, John Luntz, who owns the company, and testified about the early years. We had a witness, Deborah Duda, who testified about the payment plan that we initiated to lower our utility bills. That's in the record. We had testimony from Gregory May. We had testimony from at least a half a dozen witnesses, all in the record, all going to these facts. When the Chief Justice asked...
Well, no, following up on Justice Sweeney's question, seems like maybe we're talking apples and oranges. You seem to, if I understand it, you say it's all there in the record, but I think what I'm hearing you talk about is they made the calculations of your damages or the cost of being on the higher rates when you were entitled to a lower rate. And that's what the nature of your testimony was.
Well, the
company and the Attorney General are arguing that you didn't present any witnesses who said, we asked for the best rates, we made the requisite inquiry that puts just the burden to them to then advise.
We had the testimony of Ohio Edison's own employees. And the letters that I've just identified that indicated Luntz came to them and asked them about installing this piece of equipment. Ohio Edison conducted an economic analysis and said this is the cheapest way to do it. So we had live testimony from Ohio Edison's employees at the time who were present in 1979, 1980, 1981, who went through this, Mr. Means, I believe was one, who went through this, who identified the letters, who said, yes, these letters are true and accurate. Yes, they inquired about this piece of machinery. Yes, we wrote them a letter saying, based on an economic analysis, this is what we recommend. That is in the record. There is in the record also the payment plan that we testified. And finally, in 1982, they offered us this contract saying you must be served in general service large. So that was another contact, so to speak, or negotiation about rates when they gave us a new contract.
Do you dispute that in 1983 there was only one rate that you...
Yes. To get back to your point, yes, I do, Your Honor, and that goes to part of what they said. In 1983, my client was entitled to be served under general service small if, in the definition of, depending on how you define the word distribution facility in that tariff. That is an ambiguous provision in the general service small tariff. It's ambiguous because there is no definition of distribution facility in the entire Ohio Revised Code except the one our expert, Dr. Shaw, cited, which was discounted by the Public Utilities Commission. If you use that definition, we qualify as a distribution facility and we're entitled to be served. Under Southfield, if that's an ambiguous provision, it's entitled to be construed in our favor. And that makes General Services Small an alternative rate to us from the day you put that substation in up to the present. We were entitled to be served under General Services Small, and that accounts for the majority of our damage.
So your whole case then turns on the interpretation of what you regard as an ambiguous...
In General Small tariff, whether it's a distribution facility, and we have put in our reply brief...
And that's your whole case?
Well, I never like to say my whole case is one particular issue, but that is the majority of our damages are centered in that time period. Yes, from 1982 to 1986, and then the rest of our damages are the removal of the magnet.
Is that the issue of whether it's a distribution facility or a transmission facility?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And the commission decided against you on that issue. Is that a factual issue or a legal issue?
No, that's a legal issue. The interpretation of the tariff under Southfield is a legal issue that's usually a de novo determination. And from everything provided, it's clear, even if it is ambiguous, and if it go either way, it's entitled to be construed in our favor. That's the holding of Southfield.
So even if we give the usual deference to the administrative agency's expertise, you think that you've overcome that burden?
Yes, because of the holding in Southfield. And if you look at their opinion, they don't exercise any expertise on the definition of distribution facility. They say, well, we looked at the history, we looked at the function, they don't delineate what that is, and they just say, we think it's a transmission facility. But they don't exercise any type of expertise. They don't say, we've examined definitions all over the country.
Do they have to state in their order all the process they went through, or do we assume to some extent that they made the kind of analysis they're supposed to make?
No, they did state what they did. And what they stated was, we didn't do much. We just looked at the testimony, and that's pretty much what we went with. They did state it. I would agree with Your Honor. They don't have to state it, but once they did, it's there to examine, and it's clearly not showing any type of expertise that should be given deference. And if I could just have 1 second on the statute of limitations.
Yeah, you get 10 seconds.
Okay, thank you. I don't believe there is a statute of limitations issue until we're awarded damages. This is not a civil action. This is not a civil action. The only type of thing that can prevent it is latches. This is not the only type of civil action we have is once we're awarded a violation and we collect for damages.
Thank you. You've used your 10 seconds. Thank you, Mr. Edwards.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal, please adjourn court.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session. The Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.
Thank you.